Okay, so we're on the top of Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, on the second line. So the Gemara says, Tanya Rabbi Yossi ben Elisha Omer, Imra'isa Dorish et Saros Rabos Ba'os Alav, Seu Vidok B'dayane Yisrael, Shekol Peranas Sheba La'olam Lo Ba'a Elo B'shvil Dayane Yisrael, Shenemar Shimun Azos Rashei Ves Yaakov Uktzinei Ves Yisrael, HaMisa'avim Mishpat Ve'is Kol Haishara Ya'akishu, Bonei Tzion V'damim V'Yerushalayim Ba'avla, Rasheha B'shochad Yishbotu V'Kohaneha B'mechir Yoru, U'Nevi'eha B'chesef Iksomu, V'Yal Hashem Yishainu, Rishayim Hein Elo Shetalu B'tchonam B'misha Amar V'haya Ha'olam. Basically, the Gemara says that any difficulty, any tzara that befalls the Jewish people, or really the world at large, is a result of the actions of the dayanim, of the judges. If the judges are not acting in an appropriate manner, if they're corrupt, if they're accepting bribes, as we'll see, then that can lead to some serious problems for not just for the Jewish people, but really for the world as a whole. And the Gemara cites this long-winded pasuk from Sefer Micha that essentially backs up this idea that you have all these people who are corrupt, who are accepting bribes, and you're doing all these things as judges that they shouldn't be doing, and yet at the end, the Pasuk says that they're still turning to Hashem, right? The Pasuk says, Va'al Hashem Yisha'enu, despite the fact that they're accepting bribes and they're taking care of their relatives, etc., the Pasuk still says that they rely on Hashem, which is like an odd contrast to the rest of the Pasuk. So the Gemara says what that means is that these people are all terrible Rishayim, they're all doing these terrible Averos, but they still, for some reason, are putting their faith in Hashem. So how does Hashem respond to that? Lefichach mevia Kadosh Baruch Hu alein gimel peronios keneged gimel averos shebiyadam. Shenemar lachin beglachem tzion tzadesei charish v'yushalayim iyin tihiyah v'har habayis levamos yar. It's a famous pasuk that we say whenever a person goes to see the area of the Makom Hamikdash. When you go visit the Kotel, if you haven't been there in more than 30 days, so there's a bracha you say you're supposed to tear kriya, and then you also recite a number of psukim, including this one. It's a pasuk from Sefer Micha, where the pasuk says that Hashem is going to punish you because of the three averos that you've done. The pasuk says that Sion is going to be plowed over, and Yerushalayim is going to be laid waste, and Harabayis is going to be turned into a forest. And the Gemara says, "Ve'ena Kadosh Baruch Hu mashresh." Yes, exactly. Ve'ena Kadosh Baruch Hu mashresh chinaso al Yisrael at sheyichlu shoftim b'shotrim roim Yisrael. Shenemar va'ashiva yodi alayich ve'etzrov kabor sigayich va'asira kol b'dilayich va'ashiva shovatayich kivarishonav yotzayich kivatachil. This is actually a pasuk from this week's Haftorah, from Shabbos Chazon, where the Gemara says that Hashem will not rest his shechina amongst the Jewish people until we eradicate all of the evil and corrupt judges and officers from amongst the Jewish people. How do we know that? Because of the juxtaposition of the psukim in Yeshayahu. First, the pasuk says that we have to, get rid of all of the dross and the dregs and all the people who are dragging us down, and only then does the pasuk say, "The Ashiva Shoftayich Kivarishona, I'm going to restore things, to the way they once were." Amar Ula in Yerushalayim Nifta Ela Bitzdaka Shene Emar Tzion B'Mishpat Tipadeh V'Shaveha Bitzdaka. Gemara says, again, there's some girsa change. Some have the girsa here of Yisrael instead of Yerushalayim, which basically means that the Jewish people will only be redeemed, or Yerushalayim will only be redeemed with righteousness, with tzedek, which is also the last pasuk from this week's Haftorah, from the beginning of Sefer Yeshayahu. Then the Gemara says, Amar of Papa, Ibatle Yehire Batle Amgushe, Ibatle Dayane Batle Gezirpite. The Gemara says that if the arrogant judges are going to be nullified, meaning we're going to get rid of all these arrogant judges, then all the Amgushe will be nullified. What exactly are Amgushe? So there's different interpretations in the Rishon and what Amgushe means. So Rashi says that Amgushe refer to people who try to get us to do Averos, people who hate, Talmidei Chachamim, things of that nature. And then the second statement of the Gemara is that if we're Batle Dayane, if we get rid of the judges who are corrupt, then Batle Gezirpate, the Gezirpate were these taskmasters and officers that were appointed by the Roman government or the non-Jewish government whose job it was to basically afflict us. So then they're also going to be gotten rid of once we get rid of all of our corrupt judges. So the Gemara explains, Ibatle Yehire Batle Amgushe Dechsev Ve'etzrov Kabor Sigayich. So again, that's the pasuk also from Sefer Yeshayahu that says that I'm going to purify all of the dross, all of the dregs, all the bad things that people have. So once you get rid of that, so Hashem says, then I'm going to get rid of all the people who are trying to harm you. And Ibatle Dayan, Ibatle Gezirpate Dechsev Heisir Hashem Mishpatayich Pina O Yevech. It's a pasuk from Sefer Tzefaniah where Hashem, again, promised promise is that if that, you know, once we remove, once we clean up our justice system, so Hashem says, then I'm going to get rid of all of, you know, I'm going to get rid of all of your enemies as a result. Okay. So the Gemara now says, Amar Rabbi Milai Mishum Rabbi Eliezer Barab Shem. The Gemara is now quote a number of statements from this Amora. So the first ones are related to the Gemara that we just did, and then later in the Gemara there's going to be some, you know, kind of random statements. The Gemara says, Mai Dichsiv Shavar Hashem Matir Rishaim Shaven Moshlim. So the Gemara cites a pasuk from also from Sefer Yeshayahu that Hashem will break the staff of the wicked and the rod of the rulers. What does that mean? So the Gemara says Shavar Hashem Matir Rishaim Elu Hadayonin Shenasu Makel Lechazneim. When the pasuk says that Hashem is going to break the stick or the staff of the wicked, that's a reference to the fact that that's an allusion to the judges who essentially wield their power in an inappropriate way. They use their position as a judge to to help out the people that they're friendly with, their attendants, and you know they allow their corrupt behavior to continue. And then the pasuk says Shaven Moshlim Elu Tamidei Chachamim Shebemishpachos HaDayanim. That's a reference to, let's say for example you have a family, and in the family there's one Talmud Chacham, and that Talmud Chacham is covering up all of the actions of the people in the family who are not acting appropriately. That's also a problem. And then Marzutra Amar Elu Tamidei Chachamim Shemelamdim Hilchos Tzibur LeDayani Bor. Marzutra has a slightly different interpretation of that pasuk where he says that it's a reference to those Talmidei Chachamim who are teaching judges who are ignorant the halacha. What does that mean? So the assumption here is that if a judge is ignorant, but you teach him just enough halacha to have the facade of being knowledgeable, that's very dangerous. As people always say, you know, a little knowledge, you know, can be very dangerous sometimes. So in other words, here the issue is, you know, the issue according to Marzutra is that the Talmidei Chachamim are teaching these judges who really don't know anything just enough to look like they're legitimate judges, which is also a problem. Okay, then the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Eliezer ben Malai Mishum Reish Lakish." My dichsiv is also another pasuk from Sefer Yeshayahu. Ki chapechem nego alu v'adam ve'etzbe osechem be'avon tziv so sechem dibru sheker l'shonechem avla teheger. So the Gemara, the pasuk in Yeshayahu talks about how our hands are full of blood, our fingers are full of sin, our mouths speak falsehood, and our tongues, think about things that are inappropriate. So what does that mean? The Gemara says, "Kicha peichem nego aluvadam ilu hadayan." So when the pasuk says that our hands are full of blood, those are referring to the judges who are corrupt. They basically have blood on their hands, almost literally. Then the etzba osechem be'avon ilu sofrei hadayan. When the pasuk talks about our fingers being full of sin, that's a reference to the scribes who are recording, you know, everything that's going on in the court. Sif so sechem dibru sheker ilu orchei hadayanin. The pasuk talks about that our mouths speak falsehood. That's a reference to the various legal advisors who are advising people in a way that might be actually detrimental to them. And then l'shonechem avla teheger ilu bali din. And the last part of the pasuk that talks about how our tongues talk about things that are not appropriate. That's a reference to the litigants of the case. In other words, basically anyone who's involved in a corrupt court case is going to be held accountable. V'amar Rabbi Milai Mishum Rabbi Yitzchak Magdala, B'yom Shepirish Yosef Me'achav Lotam Tamyayin Dechsevu L'Kadko Nezir Echav. From the day that Yosef was forcibly separated from his brothers after he was sold, he didn't drink wine. How do we know that? Because it says in Parshas Vizos HaBracha, in the Brachos of Yosef, U'Lekadko Nezir Echav, from the word Nazir, right? That he was essentially, again, he wasn't formally, he wasn't, officially a Nazir, but you see from that pasuk that Yosef refrained from drinking wine. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina Amar Afhin Lotam Tamyayin Dechsev Vayishtu Vayishkeru Imo Michlal Da'ad. So according to Rabbi Yossi, not only did Yosef not drink wine from the day he was separated from his brothers also didn't drink wine. How do we know that? Because the pasuk says, After Yosef reveals himself to the brothers in Parshas Vayigash, the pasuk says Yosef throws a party, and it says Vayishtu Vayishkeru Imo. I'm sorry. This is actually the end of Mikitz. This is actually before Yosef reveals himself. The pasuk says that the brothers ate and drank. They dined together, ate and drank with Yosef. The implication is that this was the first time that they had drunk since they had parted with Yosef, since they had sold Yosef. So the question is, how would Rabbi Milai respond to that? So Vidach Shichrasu Delo Hava Shesia Miyahava. Rabbi Milai would say no. That yes, it's true that the brothers never got drunk since that point, but they still drink wine. So again, it's machlokas in the Gemara whether the brothers ever drank wine from the time of Mechiras Yosef until they saw him again when he was the viceroy of Egypt. And then the Gemara says, "V'amar Rabbi Milai b'schar v'ro'achav v'samach b'libo."
Zacha l'choshen hamishpat alibo. So Rabbi Milai has a famous statement that when the pasuk says in Parsha Shemos, when Aaron sees Moshe after Moshe's encounter with Hashem at the Sneh, when Moshe was appointed as the leader of Bnei Yisrael, so we know that one of Moshe's concerns with being appointed the leader was how Aaron would react, because Aaron was 3 years older than Moshe. So the pasuk says that Aaron was happy; he rejoiced at Moshe's good fortune, at the fact that he was appointed a leader, and because Aaron didn't harbor any jealousy towards Moshe, the Gemara says that as a result, he was zocha as the Kohen Gadol to wear the choshen over his heart. So because of the fact that he wasn't jealous of Moshe's stature, he was zocha to wearing the choshen. Okay, so now we're going to go back to some more halacha topics. So the Gemara says, Sholchule b'nei Bashchar Levi, the people from the city, or the children of Bashchar, sent the following three questions to Levi. Kila mahu, keshusa b'charma mahu, meis b'yantif mahu. So the first question is actually a little bit relevant to the general halachas we've been talking about the last couple of days, which is it permissible to erect a canopy on Shabbos? Right, again, that was a whole discussion we've had the last couple of daf. The second question they asked him, is it permissible to plant hops in a vineyard? Is that an isser of kilayim? And then the third question they asked was, are you allowed to bury a dead body on Yom Tov? The Gemara is going to address all three of these questions in detail right now. So the Gemara says, "Ada azo nach nafshe de Levi." So before before the letter reached Levi, Levi had died. Levi had passed away. So Amar Shmuel Rav Menashia, icha ki mashal achlehu. So Shmuel turned to Rav Menashia and said to him, "If you think you're smart enough to answer these three questions, then you should be the one to write back to them. Unfortunately, Levi passed away, and I'm going to respond in his place." So shal achlehu. So Rav Menashia sent the following back to these people, to the Bnei Bashchar. He said, "Kila chazarnu al kol tzidei kila v'lo matzinu latzad heter." So first of all, he said, we've looked at every angle, every halacha pertaining to putting up a canopy on Shabbos, and we couldn't find any heter at all. Meaning, in other words, he basically said, it's usher to put up a canopy on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? V'lishlach luhu k'derami bar yecheskel. Didn't we say yesterday, the last couple of daf, we gave scenarios where it's mutter to put up a canopy? We said, if you tied a string or a cord before Shabbos, so then it's okay. So how come he didn't just say, yeah, in this scenario, it's mutter to put up a canopy? Gemara says no. The Gemara says lefi she'enon b'nei Torah. We'll see this is going to be a common theme in the next couple of cases. The Gemara says that apparently the b'nei Bashchar, whoever these people were not such learned people, and apparently Rav Menashe was afraid that if he started to tell them, oh, it's mutter in this scenario, but not that scenario, they may get confused, or they may not, they may think it's mutter in all cases or whatever it was. So he just told them don't do this, because he was nervous that if he permitted them to put up a canopy in one case, they would start to put up canopies in all cases, because they weren't certain. Yeah.
That if they really from community asked him those shilas, he would have been ruled differently. And he would have different rulings for different places.
Sounds that way. I mean, again, it's meaning. La halacha, there are cases where it's mutter to put up a canopy. We already saw that in the last two daf, right? That's what prompted the Gemara's question. So the Gemara says, because these guys, the Bnei Bashchar, were not so knowledgeable in Torah, Rav Menashe was concerned that they were going to misrepresent or misconstrue the halacha, whatever it is. But yeah.
And the problem becomes for future generations, you create these inconsistencies.
Yeah, in a chanami. But again, I think the assumption is that if someone in a future generation is learned enough, they'll figure it out on their own, right? In other words, if a person remains ignorant, so then maybe this is the correct psak for them anyway. If a person figures out the halacha, they actually learn through the Gemara, then they'll come to realize, he was just saying this, to kind of cover his bases, so that this way the people don't come to make a mistake. We'll see.
Billy, this answers your question from yesterday.
What was that?
Oh, Billy asked if he could put his attached canopy.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So.
But I'll tell you an incident that happened many, many, many years ago when Rabbi Swift was in Englewood. So there was a book that was question really whether he's Shomer Shabbos or not. So when we moved to Englewood, he said, look, I tell a lot of people, because at that time 50% of the shul was not Shomer Shabbos, so he told people, you could buy in this butcher, because if he said, if I didn't tell them they'd buy there,
they would just buy,
they'd probably buy unkosher meat, but you gotta go to Washington Heights and buy from this other guy.
Got so it. Yep. It makes
a lot of sense.
We'll see. The Gemara is going to keep coming back to this idea in the next two halachos also, as we'll see. Okay, so now the second question that was asked was, kshusa b'charma, Irbuvia. So the Gemara says, what's the issue with planting hops in a vineyard? So the issue potentially is an Isser of Kilayim, of Kilei HaKerem, right? There's an Isser in the Torah. As we know, there are many variations of the Isser of Kilayim. You can't plant Kilayim in a vineyard. You can't plant Kilayim in a field. Shatnez is a variation of Kilayim, right? There are many, many different forms of the Isser of Kilayim. The Gemara says that basically the issue was here, Irbuva, the concern was that there was that there would be a potential violation of Kilayim. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? V'lishlach lehu kede Rabbi Tarfon, Desanya, Kishos, Rabbi Tarfon omer ein Kilayim b'cherem, v'achachamim omer Kilayim b'cherem, v'kaimalon kol ha-mikol ba'aretz halacha kemosu v'chutzalaris. The Gemara asks an almost identical question to the previous case, which is, but aren't there opinions out there that hold that it's not a problem of Kilayim to plant hops? Namely, there's a machlokes in the Mishnah, in the Tosefta, Meseches Kilayim, regarding whether hops constitute a problem of Kilayim. It happens to be a machlokes between Rabbi Tarfon and the Chacham. Now, even though it's true that generally speaking, we do not paskin like Rabbi Tarfon, we typically always follow the Chachamim over a Das Yachid, right, because of Yachid Verabim, Halacha Karabim. However, there's another principle that's developed primarily in the Gemara at the end of the first parak of Kiddushin, where the Gemara has this concept called Kol HaMekel Ba'aretz Halacha Kemoso B'chutz La'aretz, which basically means the following, that whenever you have a mitzvah or a halacha, that's what we call a mitzvah HaTeluya Ba'aretz, right, those types of agricultural mitzvahs that are really only, at least me, the Oraisa, only apply in Eretz Yisrael, things like Shemitah, Truma, Meiser, those kinds of halachos. The Gemara says that if for whatever reason these halachos are also going to apply in Chutz La'aretz, let's say Midurabanan, so we're always going to be Mekel, which makes sense if you think about it, because if it's only going to apply Midurabanan, then we should invoke the principle called Safik Durabanan Lekula, right? So in other words, the Isser of Kilayim Bekerem, the Isser of not planting Kilayim in your vineyard in Eretz Yisrael is an Isser de Oraisa, but in Chutz La'aretz it's only an Isser Durabanan. So the question is, even though, yes, we reject Rabbi Tarfon's Shita, but nonetheless, we should still salvage his position, at least in Chutz La'aretz. And obviously, this story was happening in Chutz La'aretz because this is the Talmud Bavli. It was written in Bavel. So the question is, why couldn't they rely on Rabbi Tarfon's opinion? Because we know that we always rely on the Mekel opinions when we're in Chutz La'aretz for these types of halachos. The Gemara gives the same answer we gave before. No, Lefi She'ena B'nei Torah. Once again, because these people, the B'nei Bashkar, they were not so knowledgeable. So Rav Menashe just wanted to kind of say it's usher across the board without starting to, you know, kind of split hairs and say this is mutter, this is usher. It was going to get too confusing. So now the Gemara says, Machriz Rav. Rav made the following proclamation. Haiman deboy lemizrak shusa b'char melizra. If a guy wants to plant hops in their vineyard, then they can go plant hops. Meaning obviously Rav thought it was totally mutter. Presumably, again, this is talking about chutzlar. It's not an Eretz Yisrael. Rav Amram Chasida menagidi lave. But Rav Amram Chasida, he vehemently disagreed with Rav. In fact, he used to give malchus to people who would plant hops in their vineyard. He thought it was literally an Isser Doraisa to plant a violin in Kilayim Becherem to plant hops in the vineyard.
Why did they pick specifically hops as opposed to some other...
That was the question that was asked them. Why the B'nai Bashkar asked? I don't know, maybe they were brewing beer and they wanted to know if they could plant hops. I don't know. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure why they asked the question at all, but that was the question that was asked, so that's what he's addressing. Okay, the Gemara now says, Rav Misharshia, Yohev le pruta le sinok nachri v'zara le. So Rav Misharshia would pay a non-Jewish katan, to plant hops for him. So the Gemara asks, v'litein le sinok Yisrael, why didn't he pay a Jewish katan? Because if he's a katan, so then he's not chayiv in mitzvah. So even if Kilayim Becharim was a problem, but the guy is, you know, if he was a Jew and he's a katan, he's not chayiv in mitzvahs anyway. The Gemara says, no, because asei le mitzrach, because if he hires an 11-year-old to plant hops for him, so then maybe in 3-4 years from now he's going to keep planting hops even when he's over bar mitzvah, which would be a problem. The Gemara says,
solely the planting, or is there also the benefit?
So that's a good question. So we usually assume that Kilayim is the act of planting itself. In fact, we typically assume that even if a person planted Kilayim be'isser, so maybe, in other words, let's say if I planted Kilayim, so I probably am not allowed to benefit from whatever grows from that, but somebody else probably could. If a non-Jew plants Kilayim, you're certainly allowed to benefit. For example, like the pomela is a cross between like a grapefruit and an orange, I think, or something like that. So it's literally Kilayim, but because, you know, some other guy is doing it, it's fine. It's not there's no Isser at all. There is a Shita in the Gemara of Rabbi Akiva, which I don't think we follow necessarily. He says that there's an Isser of to even be Mekayim Kilayim. In other words, once Kilayim was already planted, if you just keep it around, that might also be, you know, theoretically be a problem. Okay, then the Gemara says, V'litin Leila Godol Nachri, why didn't Rav Misharshia pay off a non-Jew who was over 13? Why did he dafka find a katan? The Gemara says, no, because Asei Le'ichlufe B'Yisr. Israel because they were afraid if he went to find an older non-Jew, people might confuse him with a Jew because they might not be aware the guy wasn't Jewish, and they may think that anyone's allowed to plant the hops and that it's not a problem. So he wanted to, you know, basically minimize the risk of people thinking that he was violating some kind of Isser, so he hired a non-Jewish katan. Okay, then the Gemara says the third halacha was mace. Shalach lehu meis lo yisasku be lo Yehudain velo Aramayin lo biyantif Rishon velo biyantif Sheni. Rav Menashe sent back the following statement to the Bnei Bashkar. He says a person is not allowed to bury a dead body neither on Yantif Rishon nor on Yantif Sheni, whether you're a Jew or a non-Jew. No one is allowed to be involved in a burial even on Yantif Sheni. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Ini v'ha'amar Rabbi Yehuda bar Sheila asamar Rabbi Yasi uvdahava b'vei kenishta dima'on biyantif asamach l'shabes velo yodana imi lefaneha. There was an incident in the shul of Ma'on, and again, a person had died on a yontif. Either the yontif was right before Shabbos, or the yontif was right after Shabbos. Either the yontif was on a Friday or on a Sunday. Rabbi Yochanan said explicitly that the non-Jews are allowed to bury the body for you on yontif Rishon. The Amar Rava, Meis biyontif Rishon yisasku bo amimin, biyontif Sheni yisasku bo Yisrael, va'afilu biyontif Sheni shol Rosh Hashanah ma'ashein kein beveitza. And Rava took this even a step further. Rava said that if a person dies on Yontif Rishon, so then the non-Jews are allowed to bury him. If a guy dies on Yontif Sheni, then even a Jew is allowed to bury him. And not only that, says Rava, even on Yontif Sheni shall Rosh Hashanah. Why is it like a Chiddush? Why is Yontif Sheni Rosh Hashanah different? So we know from the beginning of Maseches Beitza, right, one of the famous halachos of Hilchos Mukta is regarding a Beitza Shenolda B'Yontif. The Mishnah says in Maseches Beitza, let's say a chicken lays an egg on the first day of Yontif. So on that first day, the egg is Mukta for a whole variety of reasons that the Gemara Beitza talks about. But on the second day of Yontif, the egg is no longer Mukta. For again, the Gemara discusses this in great detail. The only exception to that rule is when it comes to the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, because we know that Rosh Hashanah is what we call a Yom Arichta, right? Everyone's heard that phrase before. Rosh Hashanah is a Yom Arichta, it's a one long day. That phrase originated from the Gemara in Beitza in the context of Hilchos Mukta, which basically just means that for the purposes of Rosh Hashanah, the second day of Rosh Hashanah is the halachic equivalent of the first day, meaning if a chicken were to lay an egg on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, it would remain Mukta for the second day. Rava said that is a unique halacha that applies to a Beitza Shenolda B'Rosh Hashanah. It has no bearing on anything else, which means that in the realm of burying a dead body, if a person were to die on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, you could bury the dead body on the second day. So the question is, why did Rav Menashe send this, you know, incorrect halacha to the Bnei Bashkar? Once again, the Gemara says, Lefisha Eina Bnei Torah, for the same reason we keep on giving, because again, they were not knowledgeable in these halachos, and again, we were concerned that they may come to misconstrue the halacha. Now again, without getting into too much detail, but this discussion about, you know, what we do b'zmanazeh when a person dies on Yontif, so typically, you know, we for a variety of reasons don't bury a mace on even on Yontif Sheni. So we typically wait till after Yontif is over. But again, in theory, you could, you know, bury a mace on Yontif Rishon either through a non-Jew or on Yontif Sheni through a Jew. Again, you know, leaving aside how that kind of plays up as man is it. What was that? Majority of people at Bazmanazet don't bury Bechlal on Yontif, again, for a variety of reasons, but again, this is the Ikar Adin. Okay. The Gemara now says, Amar Rabbi Avin bar Ravuna, Amar Rav Chama bar Guria, Mis'atif Adam b'chila uvesich sacheha, v'yotzei l'rishis harabin b'shabis ve'eno choshish. Again, now we're kind of circling back to our original topic in this perek. So the Gemara says that a person can take a canopy, wrap it around themselves, including all the straps on the canopy. They can walk out side on Shabbos into a Rishus HaRabim, and they don't have to be concerned about the straps, about carrying, about any of that. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Maishna midi Rav Huna, da Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Hayotze betalis she'ina mitzu yetzes keuchasa b'Shabbos chayiv chatas. So comes Rav Huna and says that if a person walks outside on Shabbos with a four-cornered beged, with a talis, and the talis has strings on it, but it doesn't have the correct number of strings. It's not a kosher beged of tzitzit. So let's say it's missing, it's missing one side of strings. Let's say it just has three sides of strings. That's an isser d'oraisa. You'd be chayiv chatas for that. And, you know, if you did it b'mizah, you'd be chayiv skila for that. So the question is, if I'm chayiv misa, if I'm chayiv a karban for walking outside with my beged that's missing some strings on Shabbos, so then why is it mutter for me to walk outside with a canopy that has some strings hanging down the side? What's the difference? So the Gemara says, no, tzitzis legabe talis chashive velo batle, hani lo chashive yu batle. There's a big difference, because the tzitzis strings are like an independent entity, because the tzitzis themselves are a mitzvah, so they're considered to be chashiv, and if they're chashiv, then we don't consider them to be batel. Whereas when it comes to the strings on the side of the canopy, they're kind of almost incidental to the canopy. You don't really care about them so much, and because they're batel, therefore you're not going to be chayiv when you walk outside with the strings hanging off of the canopy on Shabbos. Okay. Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna. So the Gemara says, Marim Adam Al HaMishameres B'yantif Lislos Barimonim V'sola Bashmarim Amar Rav Ashi V'hu D'sola Barimonim. So comes Rabba and says that a person can do Ha'arama. We've spoken a lot about Ha'arama in this Masechta already, right? Ha'arama is the idea of basically coming up with some kind of a trick, some kind of something to, you know that where people think that you're doing something, but really you're not doing that thing. So in other words, again, as we saw in the opening mission in this Perek, right, you know, we had the Machlokas Rebbe Eliezer and the Chachamim about hanging up a strainer, about using a strainer that was already hung up from before Shabbos or Yontif. So the Gemara says, I'm allowed to take a strainer on Yontif and hang it up, which again, normally according to the Chachamim is a problem. But the Gemara says, I can hang up a strainer on Yontif if my intention is to put pomegranates, to hang pomegranates by the strainer. So let's say the strainer is going to be used as some kind of a decoration. So it's going to be used, I want to hang some pomegranates next to the strainer. That would be okay. And then once I do that, the Gemara says, okay, so now you can start, sifting and straining all your wine or whatever it is. You could do that once you hang the strainer up. However, Rav Ashi says you have to literally actually hang up the pomegranates. You can't just say, oh, I'm hanging up a strainer to put pomegranates next. So you have to actually also hang up the pomegranates to make it obvious that what you're doing is not clearly for the purpose of straining. So the Gemara asks, Maishna mehadasanya metilin shechar b'moed l'tzorech ha-moed shelo l'tzorech ha-moed aster echad shechar t'marim me'echad shechar sa'orim afal pi sheyesh lehen yashan marim mishosem en achadash. So the Gemara says, that I'm allowed to basically brew my own beer on Chol HaMoed, even if I already have my own beer at home, right? So in other words, let's say a person has old beer, and now they want to brew new beer on Chol HaMoed. The Gemara says, that's totally fine. So what's the problem? What's the question? The question is that, well, if I already have old beer at home, why wouldn't I have to do Ha'arama? Why wouldn't I have to come up with some kind of a trick? Why am I just allowed to brew the beer, carb lash without any other strains. In other words, maybe I have to do harama. Maybe I have to, I don't know, hang up a beer bottle or something when I'm brewing the beer. The Gemara says no. The Gemara says hasam lamucha chamil sahacha mucha chamil. So the Gemara says there's a big difference between the case of the beer and the case of the strainer and the pomegranate, which is that if a guy sees you brewing beer, he doesn't necessarily know that you also have beer at home. It's not obvious that you're dafka, that you're brewing more beer than you need. Whereas in the case of a strainer, so if the guy doesn't see the pomegranate next to the strainer, he's just gonna assume that you're trying to strain wine, which would otherwise be a malacha. So that's why in the case of the strainer, you dafka need to hang up the pomegranate next to it to make it clear that it's not dafka for straining, that you're doing it as a decoration. Whereas in the case of the beer, you can brew new beer on Chol HaMoed even if you have beer at home, because no one's going to know that you have that beer at home. Okay, so that's the difference between the two Gemaras. Okay, so the Gemara now says, yeah. What was that?
I thought we're a little bit more lenient.
We're lenient to a degree. I mean, listen, on Chol HaMoed, there still is some kind of an Isser Malacha, right? So again, obviously it's not quite the same as Shabbos, but still there is an Isser Malacha that you have to contend with. So the Gemara says, you're right, you're allowed to brew beer on a new beer on Chol HaMoed even if you have the old beer at home. The only thing is that in the contrast to the strainer, so you have to make it clear that you're not dafka using it for the purpose of straining wine. Okay, so the Gemara now says, Amru le Rabbanan le Rav Ashi, Chaze mai mar hait surva me Rabbanan, ve Rav Huna barav chivan shemei, ve Amri le Rav Huna barav chilvan shemei, de shakal bara de suma umanach bevarza de dana, ve Amar la atsnue kamechavna. So the Gemara tells a story about this guy named Rav Huna, either barav chivon or barav chilvan. The Gemara says that basically, he took a head of garlic and he plugged up a spigot of a barrel, and he said, oh, I'm just plugging up the spigot of the barrel because I want to store the garlic here. In other words, basically, he ended up, straining the contents of the barrel in an almost inadvertent way. He claimed that he was just doing it because, because he wanted to store, to hide away the garlic. And the Gemara has a similar story about him. V'ozil v'noyim b'mavra v'ovar l'hagisa v'sayer pere v'amar ana l'meinam kamechad. The Gemara has another story about him where one time he went on a boat on Shabbos and he fell asleep, and then he went to go inspect some garden, some orchard on the other side of the river, and he said, "Oh, I was just sleeping," and then like magically he woke up on the other side of the river. So the point was is that because he wasn't intending to do these things, quote unquote, he wasn't intending to ride on the boat, he wasn't intending to, you know, strain the wine in the barrel, therefore it was technically mutter. So Amar Lahu, so they said to him, Harama Kamar, Harama Bidrabanani, if it's Surva Mirabanan, Lawasi Lemiyava Lechadchila. The Gemara says, you can't bring me a raya, you can't bring me a proof from these two stories about Rav Huna, Rav Chivan, or Rav Chelvan, because he was a Talmud Chacham. So why does that change anything? The Gemara says, because the whole issue of Harama, the whole requirement of doing things in a backhanded way, that's a problem for a regular guy. For a Talmud Chacham who knows the halacha, we were never going to be concerned that he's going to Lechadchila go and take a boat on Shabbos, or Lechadchila go and start straining wine from a barrel. So we actually believe him. We actually believe he was trying to hide his garlic. We actually believe he was trying to go to sleep and magically ended up on the other side of the river. We don't say he was just doing something shticky to get to the other side or to strain his wine. Because he's a Talmud Chacham, we don't think that in the future he's going to actually use this as an excuse to do it lechadchila. That's the difference. Whereas a regular person who maybe is not as knowledgeable, so if they see a guy riding on a boat, so they're not going to think, oh, he probably fell asleep, and then that cheshbon is usually not going to work out for a regular person. Okay, the Mishnah now says, "Nosnin mayim agabe hashmarim b'shvil sheyit solu." So a person can take water and pour it over the sediments of the grapes, let's say, in order to clear them. In other words, in order to give them some clear color. Umisaninenes ayayin besudarnu v'kfifa mitzris. You can also strain wine using cloth or using an Egyptian wicker basket. V'nosnin beitza b'misanenes shalchardol v'osin anumlin b'shabes. You can also take an egg and put it through some kind of a mustard strainer, which basically is meant to separate the egg whites from the egg yolks. And you can also make this drink called anumlin, which the Gemara later on discusses. It's some kind of a wine-based drink. You can make that on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'Shabbos, b'Chos, b'Yontif, b'Lagin, uv'Moed, b'Chavis. Rabbi Tzadok Omer, hakol lefi ha'orchin. Now the Mishnah presents a machlokas where Rabbi Yehuda says that, depending on whether it's Shabbos, Yontif, or Chol HaMoed, that will determine how much of that anumlin, that wine-based drink, you can make. So on Shabbos, you can only make a very small amount, just enough to fill up a cup. On Yontif, you can make enough to fill up a lugin, which is like a larger pitcher. And on Chol HaMoed, you can make even a barrel's worth. Whereas Rabbi Tzadok says, no, Rabbi Tzadok says, just make however much you need. So if you're having a lot of guests over, then you make more. If you're not having so many guests over, then you would make less. Amar Ze'iri, no sin adam yayin solal umayim salulin lesocha mishameres b'shabes ve'eno choshesh aval achurin lo. So comes Ze'iri and says that a person can take clear wine or clear water and pour it through a strainer and it's totally fine. It's not a problem. Why would you think it's a problem? Because maybe you're filtering something out. You're, maybe any of the sediments that got into the water or the wine. Where it says, no, that's okay. The only thing that you can't do is to take murky water or wine and strain it through and put it through a strainer. So the Gemara asks, Meisvei Rabban Shimon Gamliel Omer, Toreid Adam Chavis Shal Yayin Yena Ushmareha V'Nosein L'Socha Mishameres B'Shabes V'Eino Choshesh. The Gemara says that a person can take a barrel of wine, mix the wine together up with the sediments, and then pour it through a strainer. That's not clear wine, that's murky wine. That's wine mixed with the sediments, and the Gemara still says that it's mutter to put it through a strainer. So how do we resolve that with the previous Gemara? The Gemara says, no, Tirugama Ziri Ben Hagitos Shanu Ziri says that was talking about a wine that is not yet fermented. So if the wine is not fermented, it's going to remain murky and full of the sediments even after you strain it. So that's why nothing's going to be accomplished in terms of the appearance of the wine through straining, and therefore it's mutter. By the way, this Gemara actually has ramifications in halacha about, let's say, for example, you want to use like one of those Britas. You want to use like a water filter on Shabbos, a water filtration system. In theory, water filtration should be a problem of borer, because in theory, if there were, obviously if there were actual bugs in the water, that would for sure be a problem, of borer separating the bugs, but even if there were little things that you didn't want to drink, it would theoretically be a problem. Most poskim are very, very lenient about this, though, because they say that the majority of people who use a water, again, I can't speak for everyone, but most people use a water filtration system, it's not like they wouldn't drink the water otherwise, it's just, it makes the water a little bit cleaner. So usually, if you're not so machbit, if you're not so crazy about every little thing not getting into your water, so then usually we assume it's not really a problem of borer. Okay, the Gemara now says, Misanin es hayayin besudarin. You can strain your wine through a cloth.
I'm surprised that they let you do this, because based on what we just learned before, that they're always concerned in the Talmidei Chachamim in this You would think once they let you put something through a strainer, you would think you could put anything through a strainer.
Well, again, I this is not like the previous Gemara with the B'nai Bashkar. The assumption is that people learning these Gemaras are actually somewhat knowledgeable and they could, be able to tell the difference between one case and another, I think.
If you tell me I can put my clear wine through a strainer, believe me, I would tell you, I would think I could put anything through a strainer.
Okay, maybe. But I mean, saying the Gemara clearly doesn't say that, right? The Gemara is pretty clear about that. Okay, so fine. So we said in the Mishnah, Misanin es hayayim besudarin, right? You can strain wine through a cloth. So Amar of Simi bar Chiya uvilvad shelo yaasa guma. The only thing is, says the Gemara, you have to make sure that you don't make a hole in the cloth. Why is that an issue? So as we'll see in the next couple of lines of the Gemara, all the things the Gemara is about to bring up are not really malacha problems, but they're really issues of, as we mentioned already a few days ago, of uvda dechol, of things that look like weekday activity. So apparently, again, not such an expert in how to strain wine through a cloth, but apparently the way you used to do that is that they used to make a little hole in the cloth, and that was the normal way to strain wine during the week. So you'd have to use some kind of a shinui when you're doing it on Shabbos. Okay, then we said uvikfifa mitzvah, you can also strain wine through an Egyptian wicker basket. So again, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chiya Barashi Amarav, uvilvad shelo yagbia mikarka iso shel kli tefach. Again, you can't pick up the wicker basket more than a tefach from the bottom of the kli, because apparently, again, that was a normal way of straining wine through a wicker basket by holding it from the bottom and lifting it up a little bit. See, again, you can't do that on Shabbos because you have to use some kind of a shinui. Amar Rav, hai parvanka apalge dechuva share akule kuva aser. The Gemara says, if I have some kind of a, some kind of a cloth, some kind of a flax cloth that I want to use to cover my barrel, so I can use it. I can use it to cover half the barrel, but not the whole barrel, again, for the same reason, because normally when you strain a barrel, the wine from the barrel, you're going to cover the cloth over the entire barrel, not over half the barrel. Okay, Amar of Papa, lo ni hadak inish tzinyasa befume de kuzane de chavisa, mishum de mechse kemish shameres. It says, Rav Papa, a person is not allowed to take straw or bales of hay or whatever it is and put it on top of a barrel, because again, it looks like you're going to be straining the wine. Devei Rav Papa, shoafu shichra mimanalu. So in Rav Papa's house, they used to very carefully pour the wine from one the beer from one cup to another cup, and essentially what they would do is they would make sure that the dregs on the bottom of the cup of beer would remain in the previous cup, because if you were to start separating the dregs, that potentially could be a problem of borer. So Amar le Rav Acha midifti le Ravina ha'ikonitzotzo. So Rav Acha said to Ravina, so hang on one second. So fine, in the house of Rav Papa, they're not transferring the dregs, so there's no borer issue, but what about the nitzotzos? What about those last few drops of beer that are kind of, seeping out of the dregs? Those parts of the beer should potentially be a problem of borer if you're going to start separating them and moving them around to different cups. The Gemara says, no, nitzotzos the vera of Papa lo chashive. In the house of Rav Papa, they didn't care about those couple of drops of beer that they lost. This is actually based on other Gemara's. Rav Papa actually brewed his own beer, so he was also very, very wealthy, so he wasn't so concerned if he lost a couple of drops of beer from one cup, he could just make more beer. It wasn't on the top of his list of things to be worried about. So that, by the way, plays into what we were talking about before, that, if you're not so concerned about, sorting and separating through all the little sediments in the water, then having your water through a filtration system is really not a problem of borer then. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah of Venosnan Beit Sabemisanenis, you can also put an egg through a mustard strainer. So the Gemara says, Tana Yaakov Karcha, Lefi She'ein Osen Osa El Legavan. The reason why you're allowed to put an egg through this kind of a mustard strainer is because the mustard is not meant to give flavor to the egg, but it's simply meant to color the egg. Again, as we said before, the goal is to separate the egg white from the egg yolk. And it's not really an issue of borer, of good from bad, because you want both the egg and the yolk. You're just doing it for aesthetic purposes. So therefore, it's not considered to be a problem of borer.